Powerful winds continue to fuel fires in and around Los Angeles. So far, more than 20 square miles have burned, and our television screens show people frantically evacuating their homes, many after just a few minutes' notice carrying pillowcases stuffed with their most precious belongings. We'll talk with a reporter who's covering the fires in a minute, and we want to hear from you. If you've had to evacuate your home or apartment with just what you could carry, what did you take? What did you have to leave behind? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Joining us now on his cell phone in Ventura County, California, is Ari Blumenkatz. He's a reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Ari, thanks for being on the program with us.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And what's the latest on the fires? Are they coming under control?
Well, one of the fires, the Merrick Fire, that was out in North Los Angeles County, that fire does look like it's coming under control. The last update was that it was about 70% contained. However, the Sussman Fire, which is just west of the Merrick Fire, that is 0% contained. It's burned close to 10,000 acres. At least 2,250 homes have been evacuated so far, and it looks like that number is going to grow as well. So the Cessnon Fire is not yet contained, not yet under control.
And Ari Blumenkatz, the wind has been a major problem. It tends to whip up later in the day. How's it going so far today?
Absolutely. Well, there's been a red flag warning in effect for quite some time. On Sunday, when this all started out at the Merrick Fire, firefighters and the fire captains and chiefs had all talked about the wind and the Santa Ana winds as the real enemy in this fight. Last night, it was interesting. The wind was somewhat of a factor, but not quite to the extent that the commanders here had thought. What was also a factor, however, is the really rough terrain out here. There are some areas that firefighters are really having a hard time getting to, and so that makes the fire really tough to fight.
I know you've also spoken with residents as they leave their homes and have described what they take with them, for example.
Well, it's really interesting what folks will take with them and not take with them. I spoke with one gentleman yesterday, Jack Bryant, who was getting ready, preparing to evacuate. And I saw he had a cardboard box in the back of his red Prius labeled Precious Family Photos and Baby Books under it. Spoke with Jack. He said, you know, I've got all my important stuff, but we have to get those things too. We have to get the photos. We got to get the baby books in there. And then also underneath the baby books was his daughter's cello as well. And he said, you know, some things that we can stuff in the car, whatever we can't, we just we leave and we got to be safe. But it was also interesting. I spoke with a gentleman, Brian Gavin, earlier in the week. He's president of the Kegel Canyon Civic Association. And what Brian was telling me was kind of interesting, that a lot of residents in the area actually have prepared files or boxes or folders of sorts where they really have all of their important documents. Brian said that, you know, the residents will have meetings beforehand in the year, talk about having these folders ready and what to do in case of an evacuation. And the idea is just to be able to grab it and go. As soon as you get the call to evacuate, you have the folder ready, you grab it, and you get out of there. Now, Brian said that they did have that file folder. He grabbed it and left, but they were able to take also their dog, Peyton, and their two cats. And animals are really a big issue up here. It's horse country in a lot of the area up here as well. So folks have really had to worry about what to do with their horses, what to do with their dogs and cats as well.
Ari Blumenkatz, thanks very much, and be careful, all right?
Thank you.
Ari Blumenkatz, a reporter for the Los Angeles Times, with us by phone from Ventura County in California. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Amanda Ripley, a senior writer for Time Magazine, and the author of a book called The Unthinkable, Who Survives When Disaster Strikes. She also wrote an article for Time titled What to Save from a Fire, and it's nice to have you with us here today.
Thank you.
And is what Ari described typical of what people take with them?
You know, it really is all over the map. But the interesting thing is that people tend to bring very different things the second time around. So unfortunately, we now know that all over this country, there are people for whom evacuation becomes a semi-annual ritual. And you'll find that people, the second time they evacuate, bring very different things. So often your instinct is not what you wish it were.
Uh-huh. The first time. But some of the differences might include?
So you have to think not only about practical things and emotional things, but also about, say, communication and distraction. I think those are the two things that people undervalue. So you need what we've learned is for even in quarantine situation, things like Game Boys, PlayStations, those are incredibly valuable things to have with you, especially for kids. But crossword puzzles for adults, books, you often spend a lot of time waiting and worrying. And the more you can distract your brain in those times, the better you'll do.
You wrote, the only thing more valuable than a hand-cranked radio is a hand-cranked TV.
Right. You crave information in these situations, and it's actually really important. You'll make better decisions that can affect your recovery dramatically if you have information.
Now let's get some callers on the line, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. This is Margaret. Margaret with us from Rapid City in South Dakota.
Yes, hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
What did you take with you?
Well, I never have been evacuated from anywhere, but I would take my guitar.
Do you make a living with it?
Yes.
Well, that makes perfect sense. If you were a carpenter, you'd bring your carpenter's tools.
Yes.
Anything else?
I'd probably grab the cat and, you know, some under things, if I had time.
That's great. And Rapid City, well, from time to time, they do have floods there.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Do you have a bag packed?
I'm sorry, do I have a bag packed?
Mm-hmm.
I don't, actually. I know I should probably get that together, because we had a terrible snowstorm in May, I think it was, and I was totally unprepared for that. So,
all right, Margaret, thanks very much. Maybe some preparations in your house. Thanks very much for the call. I have to ask, there's recommendations put out by various agencies, and one of the things you wrote about in your article was that if you go out and buy all the things that you're supposed to have ready to go, you're going to be needing a small trailer.
That's right, and about $400. So the list is way too long that the federal government creates, and it also overlooks a lot of the emotional things that people need in order to recover more quickly and be more resilient. So, for example, the New Orleans Times-Picayune did a great special in 2006 where they asked veterans of Katrina to write in things that they wish they had had, things that they'll take next time around. And just a quick list of some of the things that struck me. My own pillow. You hear that a lot. Cat litter, and that's for the humans, by the way. The kids' immunization records, very important if you want to enroll your kids somewhere else if you have to. And my own personal favorite, wine we were saving for special occasions.
Let's get John on the line. John Withers from San Francisco.
Well, if I was in an unfortunate situation, I think I'd make a dash for three things. My little miniature dachshund, a box of family photos that I have yet to digitize, but right now they're in a shoebox, and my painting of my Miles Davis painting, which he painted in the last years of his life.
And that is that because it's emotionally important to you or because it's valuable?
Well, both, actually. It's sort of my little piece of jazz history, and I like it. And, yeah, I'd try to get out with those three things.
John, thanks very much. Appreciate the call.
Sure.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Barbara. Barbara with us from Chico in California.
Hi.
Go ahead, please. What would you take with you?
Well, I've had to evacuate three times, and I've gotten better each time. The first time I forgot underwear, forgot a change of clothes, forgot my prescription medicines. My glasses. I have all my photo albums and all my important documents. The documents we're putting in my husband's office, so we don't even have to think of those. But photo albums are already in bags, ready to go, in a closet. The kids know, go get the photo albums. So I probably did a really bad job the first time, but slowly have gotten a little bit better.
How come you've had to evacuate three times?
I live in Chico, California, and we've had a lot of fires.
And has it turned out that your house has been burned?
No. Lots of people I know. Apparently, you know, Northern California had terrible fires in June, and over 200 people lost their homes, and FEMA's not helping us.
And so this is not a complaint that's isolated to Northern California.
Well, we kind of feel it's because we're in the wrong color state.
I see. All right, Barbara. And do you have a list now that you keep ready of things that you should take with you?
No, but that would be a really good idea.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Amanda Ripley, I have to ask, do you have a list?
I do. I also have a backpack stuffed with things, but I actually find that the list would change about every 6 months, so it is a difficult thing to keep up. I think that probably the best thing to do is to have some fun with it and do it over dinner with your family. But I will say personally, the most valuable thing I took with me when I went to cover Hurricane Katrina was Ambien.
So you could get some sleep.
Yeah.
There's an interesting part of your piece that you wrote about is until you're gone, it's easy to tell yourself that your grandfather's ashes and your baby's receiving blanket don't matter. Then material things become a proxy for all the non-material things you lose, such as peace of mind.
That's right. So you become very, all of your identity changes, right? If you are in a situation where you have to evacuate for a long time. So anything you have that can make you feel like the person you were, I think is very helpful.
Let's get, let's see if we can get, in fact, Vicki on the line. And Vicki's calling us from Baltimore in Maryland.
Hi.
Hi, Vicki.
I lost my home in Hurricane Isabel, and we had about 15 minutes to evacuate. And we took two power bars, my cell phone, and my American Express card.
And did that was all you could take, or that's all you managed?
Well, first, the water was about 6 feet deep, so in order to figure swimming, that we had to have, very light. And a Ziploc bag.
And given that, did you think you made the right wise decision?
Yes, and looking back on it, and because what we found afterwards is that the things that we lost were things that we probably would have never been able to have taken in the period of time that we had, you know what I mean? I think for me the most poignant memory is my husband's stamp collection and how upset he was realizing that it had been lost. And, you know, it was, those are things that you would have never thought to have brought. And I think that speaks to what your guest said. You realize the second time around things that you would do, it just was too much stuff given that situation, you know.
Given that situation, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Vicki, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Okay.
And we'd like to thank Amanda Ripley. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Amanda Ripley, a senior writer for Time Magazine and the author of the book, The Unthinkable, Who Survives When Disaster Strikes. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.